Welcome into DC On Screen, a podcast about the DC Universe properties being brought to film and television. I'm your host, David C. Robertson, and this is my trusty cohort, Jason.
Hello.
All right, so just a big spoiler warning. If you haven't seen Gotham 202, Knock Knock, we are going to spoil the living hell out of it. We are doing this episode a little later than we should have. Apologies for that. We had some technical issues, but we're doing it now. So here we go. God, if there was ever an episode that would quell my fears, this is it. This is, oh man, so much stuff happened in this episode.
Yeah, this this episode as a whole kind of had like a come to Jesus with you. You really were a lot happier with this one. And specifically, as happy as you were, it was even more impressive given the sheer amount of the plunky music that you hate so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all over the damn place. Mm-hmm. Like, even I was tired of it.
I know, yeah.
But there it was.
But even, like, a character that I've been very disinterested in so far, Theo Gallivan, we start off with him. He's got the mayor trussed up, and he's got this medieval-looking torture chamber-looking box on his head, and he's threatening him with a spider, and if he doesn't, like, he either gets bitten by the spider, and or he calls up his secretary and says that he's run off with some random woman, and of course the press will have a field day with that. So he has to decide, and he chooses the latter. And some of the crap Theo is telling the mayor about how the city will run red with blood, He actually became an interesting character to me in this episode for some reason.
I've had hope for him the entire time just because I've seen him in a few things. He's always been he's done his job to say the least. Now sometimes he's worked with stronger and weaker material and that reflected strongly, but I always felt like he did his part. So as long as they gave him something good to work with, I feel like we're in good shape with this guy.
Yeah, and of course the mayor, as portrayed by Richard Kind, great comedic actor, great dramatic actor, but he kind of, like, this scene really, like, sends it into some comedic territory because he's funny, even though he's being tortured. He's funny. Like, I've been watching that dude, like, I think you said since, Spin City?
Spin City is where you've been watching him, as far as I can remember.
Yeah, I was watching him since Mad About You.
Right.
Great actor. Always happy to see him. I kind of hope they don't kill him off because I just really always enjoy him every time I see him. So we get this, we cut to this newspaper room where this dude is yelling about how these reporters have got to go out and find these stories and everything. And the whole time he's standing in front of this big window and, like, Jerome is just dropping people.
Well, he's having amygdala drop people.
Right, he's just having amygdala drop people.
That's the spot. Yeah.
Right, it's like these people are just like falling from the roof past this giant window.
Yeah,
and great really, comedic moment in the show.
It's a neat scene because it seems funny. Just watching Jerome's reaction, watching the news people's reaction, it all seems like it's kind of a lighthearted scene. No, six innocent people just got murdered.
There's no such thing as an innocent person, Jason.
Not in Gotham. No, seriously, it was a nice introduction, I think, to the homicidal aspect of having this guy out on the streets. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. So we have a great scene where Tigress and Barb are whipping the mayor, and he's still got the box on his head.
I think at this point, Galvin's proved his point, and now they're just having some fun with him.
And I really loved that Theo is teaching the maniacs about stage presence and theatricality.
Oh, like, yeah. And
that hit home hard.
That was really good. His flair while he's talking about it's fun to watch. And he could not have found a better pupil than Jerome.
Oh, man. So interesting things are going on with Alfred and Bruce. And, oh, my God, like, Alfred busts up Thomas Wayne's computer. Alfred's a dick.
Right.
And he does it with conviction, too. Like, he doesn't want Bruce to get in on this. He tells him, there's a great little dialogue bit where he tells he tells Bruce, this computer is a smoking gun. Guns are for grown-ups. And Alfred goes, that's a metaphor, Alfred, not an argument.
Which was, that was good. That was so good.
It was so good. And then after he busts up the computer, Bruce fires Alfred.
Right.
It's like exactly the thing. Like, we hated that in Dark Knight Rises.
Right, because it was done poorly.
Well, it was done poorly because Bruce is a grown-ass man.
Well, yeah, it was... Well, I say done poorly. It wasn't... actors aren't always the problem. I didn't think either one of them did a bad job in the scene. It was ill-conceived.
No. Yeah, it was. Like, at that point, Alfred didn't give him a note.
Right. It was bad.
Here, because this is...
what we've talked about with when he gets fired in the movies, it's wrong for a lot of reasons. One is that these are issues that Bruce should have dealt with when he was a boy instead of a grown-ass man that's taken an entire city on his back. And the other end was, Alfred, you agreed to this shit. Don't back out now. If you wanted to not be a part of it, you should have said, I don't want to be a part of it. You're half-assing it. You said you're in, I'll be in.
But this is where we get the scene where Bruce says, okay, you're fired, then goes after him eventually. Like, there's even a really just heart-wrenching scene where Alfred kind of goes in, and he's like, well, I'm off then. And he's like, fine. You know, and he's like, what was that? And he's like, I said goodbye. Oh.
Yeah, it's... like, it's
really rough.
It's a bad... it was painful to watch. And this thing is, it's the scene. Everyone's seen that scene over and over again. And it takes so long to do, and every part of it was excruciating because you felt bad for Alfred. But he really does. Like, but, you said, his conviction. When he's down there in the cellar, he decides that the computer should go. He picks up a baseball bat, and it goes.
Oh, yeah.
I did wonder why the fuck do you have a baseball bat down there by your computer?
Well, by that measure, why do you have, a bulletproof vest with three slugs in it and what appears to be a number of...
Actually, that's a good point. We've been talking about the...
crime-fighting.
It's a show where Gotham grows up in front of our eyes, and apparently there was an entirely different conception of Batman as Thomas Wayne had it. His was more baseball-related.
Right.
It's just... entirely different play.
Oh, like Bruce gets to about teenage years, he's like looking around. God, my dad was lame.
Right. Baseball.
But I still want to honor his memory.
Right. I want to honor his memory, but in a way that's different.
But what's beautiful about this is Bruce does. He goes to the train station. He finds Alfred. He says, look, I'll take you back, but there are stipulations. Like, you have to do this my way. I'll go back to school if you'll come back, but and they have this very very terse conversation where they basically negotiate how this is going to work. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I really because both of them are so hard-headed and just I don't know, it was
it's
good.
Two mules having a discussion, but they need each other. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They absolutely need each other. Yeah. I mean, there's no version where these two can walk away and be complete people ever again.
Yeah. Now, after that with Alfred, we see him go to Lucius, and he basically threatens Lucius
in the most British and amazing way possible.
Yeah, he says he's gonna wrap him up like a kipper.
Right.
What's a kipper? It's a smoked fish. But no, he outright says that if he is misleading Bruce or going to hurt Bruce in any way, he will kill him.
Yeah, there's no... he starts all British with a nice little side story, and he saunters up all under kind of different pretenses. And, he's got some... He's suave when he wants to be, right? Like, he walks right into this situation with all the confidence you could ask for. There are con men that could learn a few things easy. And, by the end of it, he is downright gangster with him. It's...
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to grow up to be Batman, you might as well... I mean, I guess the best possible scenario for that would be to grow up with a butler who is, former SAS.
Right.
Like, just straight-up MI6 shit. Just... His surrogate dad is James Bond.
It saves on payroll, to have a butler and security guard combined.
Right.
It's frugal.
His surrogate dad could have actually been in the Avengers at some point. Not the Marvel Avengers, the old Emma Peel show. Anyway...
that thing no one can find anymore on the internet.
Right.
Because Whedon killed it.
Yeah. Damn.
What a loss.
So jumping back to Theo Gallivan and him teaching the criminals theatricality, we have a scene where the cannibal guy, what was his name, Woodward or something, or I don't know.
This is the third time we've asked ourselves what that was, and we haven't bothered to look him up yet. And part of that's because he's dead now.
Well, he's dead now.
I don't care. Yeah, he's whatever.
Yeah, but I really loved that. Like, he picks up a sword, and Jerome wants the sword. And, oh man, like, they're arguing about who will be the boss, and Theo just kind of brings him a gun and tells him, like, you know this game. Oh yeah, we like this game. Okay, cool.
No, Jerome says he likes the game. The other guy starts showing signs of fear then. And this is where if there was a moment, like, I feel like this is a defining moment between people who do or don't like the way Jerome's doing this character. If you liked him already, this sealed the deal completely. If you were on the fence, I think you probably made it into one of the two camps after this discussion. And if you hated him after this and before it, then you've made your decision. I don't know if you're coming back, but there can't be too many people on the fence now.
Yeah, no, I've liked him since the beginning. The same time, some of his stuff is a little hammy.
Yeah, he hangs out in that area, but he's asked to do a character that's so over the top that we have to expect some of it to get a little over the top. I was sitting there watching that, and you know, when you start out with you have a certain amount of odds with roulette. All right, well, the cannibal guy is the first to grab the gun. Of course, they're still posturing right now. He's the first to grab the gun. He shoots himself, or he pulls the trigger. Great. Well, it's five, and you got one. Hands it back. Jerome's got a 20% chance of killing himself now. Jerome clicks it again, 25% chance. Clicks it again, 33% chance. Clicks it again, 50% chance now, handing it back to the guy. Man, them ain't good odds, brother. You're not. One of the things you love most watching it, like Jerome's speech when he's doing it, you know, what's grace under pressure, or what's courage, grace under pressure, what's the secret to comedy timing? And then just simply staring him down and who's the boss, one more click, I'm the boss. And Theo, who's been literally ducking out of the way the entire time, because who wants to be the guy who got killed by the ricochet on a Russian roulette game? That's a shitty way to die.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just got to suck.
Actually, if they had done that, if he had handed it back to Cannibal,
right?
That's what I'll call him now, Cannibal.
Yeah.
If they had handed it back to him and he shot himself, and Theo Gallivan had just like been shot by the ricochet and died. That would have been a lot of fun. A lot of build-up for a character who dies in the second episode, and we could have had a great scene where Jerome just kind of looks at his dead body and goes, huh.
You can see him just kind of, huh. And then realizes,
yeah.
Well, I own this mansion now. Come fight me for it. That would have been good. But you can tell during that conversation, like, he's ducking out of the way, but he is eating it up. He is loving that. Like, Jerome is already displaying the kind of the kind of theatrics that he was hoping to train. He's just walked in the door with it. It's freaking perfect.
Well, this bastard grew up in the circus. His whole life is theatricality.
Right. Well, we say he grew up in the circus. We don't really know. I mean, I don't remember if he said how long he'd been raised there.
Well,
no,
I mean,
he was raised there.
Yeah, his parents were two circus performers.
They were. I was trying to remember if the story was continuous, if they had dipped in and out of it. But no, they were there, and they were raised there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he should pretty much have this under his wing already. And he does, you know, when he does the first little test, he gives them, like, who can say the ladies and gentlemen thing, and Jerome pops up on the chair, seat of his chair, and does it with all the flourish you can hope from a lion tamer. But yeah, like, in this conversation, you the look on the Cannibal Dude's face versus the look on Jerome's, it is very clear who here has pissed their pants and who hadn't. A winner has been decided, and you can see Theo just reaching in to grab the gun, almost thinking to himself, why let Cannibal Guy shoot himself? We're going to need that extra pair of hands.
Mm-hmm.
No point.
For at least one job.
Right? But come on, you're dealing with a kid like Jerome. You know you're just setting people up until he shoots them, until he gets them killed or kills them himself.
Yeah.
Like, his department, if you're running a business, is not going to have a great retention rate. Not happening.
Now, the school bus with the cheerleaders.
Uh-huh.
Did you actually want them to die?
I was so torn.
I kind of really wanted them to die.
Want them to actually go through with it. I kind of thought it was a little cheesy that Gordon happened upon it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have been like, this is TV, man. We can't do certain things, and there's no point. You don't have to do this to tell. I don't have to see the 17-year-old girls burning to make this story count for me. If you had cut, like, once you got the idea of what they were doing, if you had cut come back from commercial and, you know, shown me a smoldering bus, I know what had happened. I didn't have to see it.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't need to see the bodies.
No.
I mean,
this didn't have to be an episode of Bones. I could just...
To be fair, I like to imagine they could have just, you know, reused the effects from the opening credits of Constantine.
But you're right. Right.
Like, we can't show 17-year-old girls getting burned to death in a bus, but people writhing in hell.
That's no problem. We can do that. Put that in the opening credits. You know, throw that on every episode, right. Mandatorily. Stamp it. Somebody's going to tell you, like, well, one of the writhing souls in the opening shots of Constantine was actually a 17-year-old girl who died on a bus. Well, show it anyway. We don't have to show the backstory.
And by the way, when they capture that dude and he's going to talk, damn, Tigress. Sniper Tigress.
Oh, man. No. Don't fuck with her. I had forgotten to mention to you before. Something that was kind of nice about this episode was, you know, we thought it was fun to watch the mayor getting whipped, but it was, you know, if you actually look behind him, Tigress and Barbara are just giggling away. I mean, it's actually those are full blown, really happy, enjoying themselves smiles.
Uh-huh.
You would think they were playing a game of badminton with a mint julep in their hand.
Yeah. Well, who wouldn't want to whip a fat mayor with a box on his head?
Depends on the mayor. Depends on the mayor. Could name several that I've had exactly that fantasy about.
Right.
But in this case, like, when through the whole season, when Tigress is being just a card-carrying bad girl, remember back at that scene when you did see her smile?
Yeah.
While she's assassinating the fuck out of the rest of the city?
Mm-hmm. Or at least a little dirty squealer.
You can't have those. You just can't.
No.
Now, something that was lacking from this episode, do you ever, and this is a problem that we may have with Gotham as it goes on, because you can't address everything at once and there's a lot going on. Do you ever find yourself enjoying an episode, getting to the end of the episode, and kind of going, aw, Penguin?
No. I know we'll get enough of him later.
You're just having faith in the whole process?
Yeah, I mean.
Don't get me wrong. I have we'll faith in the process. This was a huge Jerome episode. We're probably getting a Penguin, like, this week. I get it. I know how the game is. But do you ever just find yourself, like, you enjoy the episode, and then you think, oh, it'll have to be another week before I get to see Penguin again?
I really don't.
You're just hanging in there? Being a trooper?
Yeah, I'm good. Right. I'm good. Like, okay. I've seen enough of dude playing Penguin. Not that I don't like him. I really do like him a lot, but
you've expressed great affection for everything but his hair.
Yeah, like last season we got so much of him though. Like I became afeared. That we were going to get
the burn out on drama Penguin. Hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
There'll be
so I'm happy to see them stray from him just a bit. Speaking of characters that I'd like to see them stray from, Nygma. Still disinterested with his double talk. I was glad. I was happy that they didn't do the mirror again.
Don't see the mirror again, I'm good.
And there was a great bit where, like, he's, like, yelling at himself and throws papers at himself and, like, looks over and there's just, like, this cop. And the cop just has this look on his face. He's just staring at him. Like, he just has the most befuddled look on his face, and it cracked me up. Like, I even rewound it and watched it over
like
again.
Post donut coma expression.
It a little bit is, yeah.
He has no idea. Like that intake of carbs and sugars did not prepare him for walking in on Nygma throwing papers at himself.
Right. Oh man, okay. One thing I want to get to before we get to the bulk of the climax here. I love that Bruce told Alfred, "You're either with me or against me."
Mm-hmm. And specifically with his...
Dude, Bruce is getting biblical on Alfred.
Oh, yeah.
This is a
person who's going to grow up to be one of the more determined humans in the history of fiction. You know, surely he's pretty decisive as a youngin.
Mm-hmm.
And...
pretty decisive as a youngin.
Right. I would reckon. A stern youngling. Two majorly fun things happened out of that conversation with him and Bruce and Alfred though. And one MI6 training for Bruce.
Oh, right.
I there's not enough time for me to really express how happy that makes me. Just several exclamation points worth of happy. And two, Bruce going back to school. I can deal with that.
Yeah, that can be very interesting.
I can deal with that. As you pointed out, that's basically, you know, the That's the doorbell for Silver St. Cloud.
Mm-hmm. It is. I think it would have to be.
That's, surely that's where we meet that character. But
I sincerely hope we get a little more Tommy Elliot.
I wouldn't mind a little more of that back and forth. I would kind of like to see Bruce like walk past him in the hallway and give him that, what? I beat your ass look. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the thing is, like, how long can Bruce run around with full-grown adults and homeless kids before he eventually has to go have a healthy relationship with a peer?
Mm.
You got to get that in there.
Forever.
And, yeah. No. That's the thing is, like, he's, he's going to grow and learn how to be, Batman over the years, but he's also going to learn how to put up the Bruce Wayne mask and going to school. Right. I think it's going to be an important thing for that. I'd like to see him learn how to be Bruce Wayne as much as I'd like to see him learn how to be Batman.
Yeah. And they have said that they're going to go that way in this season. They're
the kid
show him kind of doing the Playboy thing. Yeah.
He was excited. Yeah,
so Barbara shows up at the police station and lures Jim out into an alley. Now, I mean, I know she's psychotic, but it was a little irksome that she was kind of, I don't know, acting like this was all Jim's fault. Like, I tried to tell you. Like, no, you didn't. You were like, I can handle this.
Her level of...
I can handle your life.
Her level of delusion, I didn't question that for a second. What I questioned was before that, look, if I have an ex as crazy as Barbara, and she shows up at my workplace uninvited, I'm going to get the best friend I have at that workplace to quietly go remove her from the scene, because there's no way I'm walking outside with her. I'm not going to meet with her at my workplace. I'm not going to walk outside in private with her. We're not having this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you had done that, you'd probably be dead, because that's when the maniacs attack.
Presumably.
And they kill every damn body.
I mean, every pretty damn much. Body. We thought it was going to be Penguin that dropped a lot of blood, just because we didn't... Did you think Jerome was going to kill this many people? I thought they would lead up to it more. No, this is episode fucking 2, and he's dropping folk. It's
I know
pretty great.
Well, I mean, he had to catch up because, you know, he had that great scene with the cannibal where he's like, you know, how many, what is it? How many people do you have to eat before it gets tired?
Oh, yeah. He asks him, what have you done? Do you chop up your mommy? And he kind of gives him that like, yeah, okay, everybody has to start somewhere. And I thought that was a fun back and forth.
Yeah.
And then he kind of gives him the, you know, his retort is, but, you know, but I have brains. I have vision. You know, what did you do? You eight 12 little girls, like how long can you keep doing that before everyone gets to get tired of your stick, you know? To which the cannibal replies, you know, I could eat one more. I like the back and forth. The dialogue in this thing was a lot of fun.
Was
specifically, I'll always remember the cannibal for saying I could eat one more. That's how I choose to remember him.
I will always remember him for getting killed
for stepping
by Jerome
on the punchline.
Yeah, for stepping on the punchline. Like, that was my line.
Probably the first. Possibly the first. We'll just say possibly the first person in what will be the Joker's history to have died for stepping on his punchline.
Yeah.
At least the first recorded. Love that line.
Now, Sarah Essen, dead.
Yeah, and I meant to apologize.
Huge.
Or recant, or rephrase, or however you want to do it. I do believe you were right. That they were trying to set Sarah Essen up as being the inside man.
Yeah.
I just believe they did a really shitty job at it and that I never
Agreed.
Bought it.
Right.
I'm willing to accept that's what they were trying to do, but come on, man. Like she never struck me as the person who was going to be able to actually change anything from inside. She just struck me as the person who was hanging on anyway because she didn't have the guts to do something else.
Right. And I can see why you would say that. It seemed to me that they had an unspoken bond that they were, I mean, not even unspoken, they'd said it, but kind of, but,
they were hints. Yeah. They didn't sell it for me. But in retrospect, and especially after this episode, I decided you were probably right, if, you know, esoterically at least. So, sure. But all of our speculation about Essen and Gordon, just... Dead on a stick.
Gone. Gone. Like, that is one of the things that really excited me about the episode, because I was like, holy shit. Did they actually just kill Gordon's future wife? And of course
right.
they did.
Of course they did.
Like, oh man, there's no telling where the show is going to go. And that's what makes it exciting for me. Like, when you look at a prequel and you say, how are we going to make this story work? Because we know certain things about certain characters, and we know that the main characters can't die.
We know who's supposed to be part of the Gotham mythos. Yeah,
right. Yeah, and like just the actress who played Sarah Essen was saying in an interview after this episode premiered that no one is exempt. Like, no one is exempt from this. Like, you could kill anybody, and this what they're going with. Like, they are open to killing anyone, doing anything they want to, essentially, with this. And, man, that's some balls, and I've got to give them props for that at the very least.
Yeah. I mean, you have to earn it. You have to make it worth it. If you just start killing people just to be different, we're going to call you on it. I mean, the viewership on the whole is going to say, you can't just do that to get a rise. That's shitty. But this felt good. I mean, you know, hate to see her go, but this felt this was a good death. You know, she kind of she serves a neat purpose. She opens up whole new doors by getting out of the way of them. Yeah. Essentially, shuts down a lot. It opened more doors than it closed windows. We'll call it that.
There is no shame in this death,
right? You know, I enjoyed her scene, and you know we. I don't even know if we need to go on about how much we enjoyed Jerome's mania during the scene. Great job.
Dude, like he's talking to the camera, and then we got like a cop like grunting and crawling, and he just like looks over, interrupted and annoyed, and shoots the guy. Like,
right.
Some people have no respect for her. Yeah. Oh man.
Right.
So Barb tells Gordon, you should get back to the precinct. No telling what's happened. Since you've been there. Okay. He runs back to the precinct, bloodied up by Nicola.
Stumbles back to the precinct.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it anything as controlled as a run.
Finds everyone, just everyone dead. And then Bullock.
Cowboys Bullock comes back.
Yeah. We previously met.
What is that stuff that wanders across the landscape? The little bush weeds or whatever? The little circles of weed?
Yeah.
I expected
tumbleweed.
One. Tumbleweeds. I honestly expected a tumbleweed across Gordon's desk. Essen's old desk. Wow, wow, wow. Right? It was just, he walks in all standing there, and it's just, oh man, it's all the cowboy you could expect. You can just hear him.
It is.
You know, either she understands or she don't. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. By the way, you know, that she being Scotty, Harvey's fiance, who doesn't want him to go back to the force. And by the way, you know, she seemed to be a very logical, sensible, intelligent, and extremely attractive woman. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not a hooker. Harvey, hold on to that.
I'm sure his previous relationships were full of lovely women. But
maybe you consult with her briefly.
Maybe you try to make this right with your woman on the way. It's about the most machismo filled line you can give, though, right? Like either she understands or she doesn't. All right. Well,
he didn't say it that way.
He did in my head.
He actually said it with a lot more worry. He was like, "She'll understand," and then he kind of like pauses and thinks,
"Or she won't."
He goes, "Or she won't." it was a lot more worrisome than that.
I don't know. That
he's
pose
not,
was selling
he's not
it.
Jonah Hex.
That's what I was hearing. Is Jonah freaking Hex?
That's exactly what I was hearing.
It was fun to watch these two get back together. Now the entire precinct apparently consists of like Bullock, Enigma, Kringle, Gordon, and everybody who was in the bathroom when the shooting occurred.
Right. Well, hell, they're both on Fox. They could probably just get, you know, some of the crew from Brooklyn Nine-Nine to come over and help.
Yeah. Those contracts got to be like, there's got to be some wiggle room in the contracts.
They're having some issues with the Vulture being the captain over there on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So.
A lot of the crew decanted and went to this precinct.
Right, right. Which, you know, Essen dying, you know that opens up the door for your boy.
Which boy? I have many boys.
Chickless.
Oh, yeah.
Chickless, man.
Yeah. My pet bulldog.
Jowls McJowley.
Jowls McJowley the third, yeah. You got to think that's where it is, right? Because there's definitely a staffing issue at this precinct at this point.
Okay, I have a question mildly. For you.
Uh-huh.
How much do you want him to be talking to Gordon about all the corrupt shit in Gotham and be like, no, those days are over? And how much do you want him to like look up and go, it's clobbering time?
Oh, Okay, I'll tell you this right now. I say this unequivocally. If at any point, I don't care how tongue-in-cheek they're trying to be, he says it's clobbering time, I will turn off the episode and I will never watch another.
Oh, no.
I stand by it.
We're part of a network. We're contractually obligated now.
I don't care. I'll watch every other damn thing. I will watch Supergirl twice a week to make up for it.
Even if it's well done. Even if he says it and Jim just kind of looks at him cockeyed and he's like, never mind.
I just honestly don't think there's a possible way they could do that well enough for me not to go, oh, come on, and turn off my television. Maybe even throw something at it. They may have a small claims court case on their docket with, you know, my $200 television.
Okay. What if somebody comes in and calls him Commish and he just kind of goes, that's Commissioner Jowls to you or whatever it is.
You can't complain about you cannot complain about cartoony music and then try to turn him into an actual Looney Tune character.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about turning him in. I just, you know, want vague references to his show, The Commish, his tenure as The Thing.
Right.
You know.
The best I'll give him is, if maybe somebody sees him at a distance as he's approaching and they're like, what's that thing? And he's like, oh, it's a dude. I don't know. Maybe. I don't really want a damn Fantastic Four reference in the whole thing. I don't. I just don't. If they want to do a quick mention of Commish and he says, I don't like that name or something like that. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's just ignore the fact that Chiklis has ever been employed before this moment.
All right,
make it No Ordinary Family, because the two people who remember that are going to be all on it, all kinds of on it.
Yeah. He could just be like, this is No Ordinary Police Force.
All right, no, that's how it's going to be. He's going to give some winding up speech about how the few of us are left are a family, and this is No Ordinary Family. And then proceed to talk the truth.
And finishes the speech with, it's clobbering time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone kind of looks weird. And he goes, what, you never read comic? Never mind.
Right.
I would be down for that. That would make me laugh. That wouldn't be a deal breaker for me by any stretch.
It's going to be a dark, dark day.
Well, okay, I'm measuring that against, you know, Fish Mooney scooping out an eye.
I'm putting it up against Fish Mooney being thrown into a pool of water. And I'm putting still it saying against, no clobbering time.
I am putting it up against Jeffrey Combs on a woman's body.
It's pretty bad.
If Jeffrey Combs' head on a woman's body and screaming in agony in the Dollmaker's prison doesn't make you turn off the show, but this clobbering time does, you have something wrong with you.
No, I made it through Butch doing a remake of that bad SNL moment with Avril Lavigne, and I still watched the show.
I know. So what's a little clobbering time?
It's a lot of clobbering time. Did you see those movies?
I think we've already been clobbered.
I can't do it. I can't face his jowls and punnery at the same time. I just can't.
Oh, it could be a lot of pun.
don't do that to me.
Oh, anything else for this episode, or we gotta shuffle off this episode?
No, the last thing was an actual problem I had with the episode for realsies.
Okay.
Bruce Wayne wandering into the active crime scene.
Oh, no. That was great.
I thought it made for a fine moment. It's just, it's, you know, again, the things we just named, I still found that unrealistic.
Well, I found it at least realistic. I mean, normally I would assume that there would be a cop standing there to stop them from going into the crime scene, but they seem to all be taking a nap on the floor.
Right. So. A very, very wet nap.
But yeah, touching as hell, man. He goes in and hugs Gordon, mm-hmm. thankful that he's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Apologizes for being rough on him. Oh, man. Yeah.
I believe Alfred even nods. It's pretty touching for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I was down with that. Like,
I liked the moment. It was just, as soon as Bruce wandered in, I my first instinct was like, hey, who'd let that kid in here? But it's an active crime scene.
I'm assuming any cop is just going to be like, you know what? This kid needs to see the carnage because he donates stuff to people. So he could probably donate a lot to getting this place back.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
That's pretty high-minded, though, for the crew that, you know, wasn't in the bathroom.
Right. Well, I mean, this is Gotham. Everyone's got an ulterior motive. They have to think that way to survive. If they have survived thus far, then
they're
have
always
to imagine
thinking
they're like,
bribes and greased backs somewhere.
Right. So they're thinking, oh, let the kid in. Let's let him see, get a taste of the real world. His parents were killed, man. I know, but this is worse because this is cops. Maybe he'll give us some money.
Right.
The kid likes Gordon. Hey, whatever. I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous, but it's. Have you been watching the same show I've been watching?
Yes, and I still found it a little distracting. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you, man.
And by the way, I seriously doubt they just walked right in.
They look like they just walk right in. I mean, the same way Barbara, a wanted woman, just strolls up to the door.
Yeah, that should be more problematic than Bruce and Alfred, you know, MI6ing their way into a you know, graveyard for cops.
It kind of, yeah, and it kind of doesn't, I don't know, it's not as weird as it should actually be, because, God, anytime you've actually seen the cops that aren't the featured cops in the show,
mm-hmm.
they're all, you know, 300 pounds of dumbass.
That's about right, yeah.
Bumbly McBumberson the Third, every one of them. I guess, well, no matter how poorly they perform at their job, I guess I really can't call it out of canon for the show so far.
Yeah. So, by the way, I don't think we mentioned it. Eddie did take a bullet for Miss Kringle. So I'm assuming that's the...
I like watching him get a little physical. Get a little something going.
Maybe
that'll get you out of your dilemma. Maybe it will. Think about how much more confidence he's got now that he's actually taken a bullet. Maybe that confidence starts crossing over and he starts merging his personalities a little bit more. Because that was the other part, is that guy keeps saying he's so much more confident. Well, she'll like me more. Well, now, you know, Riddler Prime can sit there and say, dude, fuck you, I took a bullet for her. Fuck you, face in the mirror.
Yeah, and, you know, a TV show like Gotham, their characters are so thin so often, especially side characters like Eddie and Kringle. They're pretty thin. I'm sure they can manage their way into thinking, like, oh, well, he took the B, so now she'll take the D, no matter how creepy he's been up to this point.
Right. Because that's how people work, surely.
No, but... Oh.
Even if I'm right about that, and they do use this as a seed to start wrapping up his character, there's going to be more. Because now they've made Mirror Enigma an actual character that requires, you know, wrapping up somewhere. So you're stuck with him for a minute.
Well, you know what would be funny is if they just killed off everyone on the show and Bruce never becomes Batman at all.
Why are you getting all Ben Stiller on this shit, man?
I don't know why that's Ben Stiller, but...
He has a tendency to try to want to make his movies the anti-climax. They rarely let him, but usually his pitch is like, and what if a bus just came and hit the couple in the middle of the film? And then we make it about another couple. Okay, why? How would it be great? No, it's not great. It's not great at all. Anyway, we're talking about Ben Stiller at this point. It's time to wrap it.
All right. That's going to do it for this news episode of DC On Screen. And we are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. If you like this show and want to contribute, please remember to give us those 5-star ratings and reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. You can also find every episode at DCOnScreen.com. If you'd like a similar podcast for this Marvel Cinematic Universe, go check out our friends Matt Carroll and Jeff Randall at the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast or MCUcast.com. Coming up, we're going to have our 90s Flash series review and our CW Seeds Vixen all coming up over the course of the week. So stay tuned to that, guys. Until then, keep some DC on your screen.